HD Smartcast. You are listening to an HD Smartcast original.
एक मिनट रुक जाओ, रेडी होने दो. चलो ये कर लेते हैं. दिस कुड बी अ ग्रेट इंट्रो.
हाय, आई एम अक्षय.
हाय, दिस इज सौरभ एंड यू आर लिसनिंग टू द फाउंडर थीसिस पॉडकास्ट. We meet some of the most celebrated startup founders in the country.
And we want to learn how to build a unicorn.
How do you raise great kids? Well, many times it is by doing something as simple as making kids play outdoors. This was the thesis with which our guest today started and built up a company over a decade and a half. In this episode of Founder Thesis Podcast, Akshay Dutt is in conversation with Saumil Mazumdar, founder and CEO of Sports Village, and they discuss some amazing concepts like lazy success and how to scale up a serendipitous idea. Here is Saumil talking about his time at IIT Mumbai.
But otherwise, I think one other two things that I felt since you asked about IIT experience, I think is relevant across. One is on the sports side, you know, let me give you a data point. I was selected for a March Badminton team in 9th, 10th standard, and then 12th, after 12th, I got into IIT. And I must say, actually, I thought I was the cool dude, right? You know, I had academy career, sport career, I had a champion. And I could not get into the IIT Bombay Badminton team at first.
It was very competitive.
I could not get into it. That's how good people were. And I thought that I am one of the few cool dudes who is doing acads and sports. And what IIT told me was, not really. There are a lot of other people who are able to balance academics and sports and do it better than you. And to me, that was a very interesting insight. That this, the rhetoric around sport has been, if you do sport, it's at the cost of
academics. Right. Yeah.
That's not true. That is, in my mind, an excuse that kids are making and parents are letting them make. Because if you really want to do it, think about it. Now, you can. You have enough time to pick up on your academics.
That's a pretty good insight.
Right? And people are doing it. So I mean, whenever people tell me that academics, sports, I'm like, why? I mean, I've seen the best of best minds, you know, play the best of best sports and still find a balance. Of course, they sacrifice other things, right? Of course, they don't do everything else. But they just pick these two and they are like as good as they can be. So it's possible. What we want to do is also hang out with friends, also watch movies, also. And then say, well, actually, my sports kar raha hu, tumhara academics kharab hai. I don't buy. Because the same athlete, I'll come to that, the same athlete who's able to work so hard at, you know, getting a shot right, getting the run right, getting the technique right, it cannot be that he or she does not have the willpower to apply to this problem of, you know, correcting a maths problem. It's an application issue, it's not an ability issue. So this is one, which is that, you know, sports and academics are not mutually exclusive. They can both coexist. The second one was really, I got exposed, well, three things maybe. Second one was, I got exposed to this notion of lazy success.
Mm-hmm. What do you mean by that?
So lazy success is you achieve a success, but do it with the least effort possible.
Are you saying this as something to be aspired for, or are you being critical of lazy success? I mean, to you, lazy success is...
No, I think it's a fantastic thing that you just think so much and find the easiest way to do the least and achieve the most.
Okay. Which also, I think, is called path of least effort.
Yeah, I mean, sorry, I don't know those words, but yeah, to me, it was just lazy success because I could see people around me. कोई लेक्चर अटेंड नहीं करेंगे, कुछ नहीं करेगा, सडनली वो एग्जाम से दो तीन दिन पहले, दो तीन फंडे जो कोर है वो क्रैक मार लेगा कि यार ये समझ गया ना तो बाकी समझ गया. And then they would crack the exam. And they were like, shit, man, you've been studying the whole year. And this guy just spent like 3 afternoons. So which of course means that they're very smart, right? But they're also able to really focus on the essence of the problem. Right? It's not like they're winging it. It's not like they're gaming the system. They really understand better than you, but they understood the code very well. And you are sometimes just figuring out the periphery. So lazy success was another very interesting thing. But I think very often we over-glamorize.
Did you master it yourself? Lazy success?
No, I'm trying. Not yet. I mean, I try to do it. Sometimes it works. But the interesting part of late success is what is that you think so much about the problem that you try and do it with the least effort. So I do, to be a bit immodest, I do think that I achieve the same amount of same amount of outcome with maybe 30-40% less effort than everybody else, right? And which is in some sense, I think the IIT, I'm not saying it's excluded to IIT, I just learned it. And the last part is the joy of solving a juicy problem. I think that thing that, man, ye problem to solve karna. So the last part was, is the third part was the joy of solving a really juicy problem, you know. There's to be this notion called EP, ego problems, that we used to use a phrase in IIT, that abhi EP ho gaya, ki isko to solve karke rahenge. So then you would stay up all night, you would do all kind of stuff, but solve the damn thing. And I think that sense of, I don't know what to call it, the sense of I will solve it. And that confidence that you will figure it out. It might take time, but you will figure it out. Just stay at it, you will figure it out. And that probably has been the reason I'm still in sports village, been building sports village for 17 years. Yeah, this problem of getting kids to play and building a good business is such a juicy problem to solve. It's such an important problem to solve. This is worth solving. Why can't I solve it?
Now, let me come back to the business in a more chronological fashion. I'll come back to the same question again. For now, let's park this, but I want to kind of reach there as, you know, as a part of your journey. So you know, in IIT, you had like a bunch of insights, which you told me about. Why did you then decide to, or again, as you said, it's not always a choice, but why did you pursue an MBA from IIM Bangalore? Like, what? Why not look at working?
This is more a career conversation, right? Because a lot of the career choices that at least we made were really about what you don't want to do. Like in 10th standard, I didn't want to do biology and Hindi, so I took, you know, science. But it was really, kya mujhe nahi karna hai, it was not kya karna hai. My elder brother went to IIT, so I was like, what the hell, I can't do IIT. Right? And I didn't want to do medicine. So very clearly, medicine nahi karna hai. I had heard of something called IIT. I had gone and spent a summer with him there. I liked the idea. Hostel where I can't know. So some of the decisions are not really, there's a really long-term plan and all that. In my first year at IIT, second year, halfway, I threw, I realized that this is not what I really want to do. And then it became tricky because you worked so hard to get into that really institute and now you're like, you don't want to do this. Right? And like, okay, now what? And that's when I heard about something called management. Something called management, this may basically is not engineering, it's not core engineering, but you learn engineering and IT. And it's, you know, something called marketing and something called finance and sales and all that. And you work with people and, you know, I like that. That sounds interesting. It was more, I don't want to do the engineering, so what else do I do? Because 95% or 98% of my batchmates did gave GRE as I did and went abroad. I and a few other batchmates gave our CAT and stayed back. It was, we have a very small percentage of people who stayed back. So it was really what I didn't want to do of engineering and CAT and management became the next thing that seemed to make sense. So that more like a
plan. I guess you must have also discovered that you're good with people because being a sports psyche means a lot of dealing with public, dealing with people kind of work.
Yeah, I don't know, frankly, us time par how much analysis of these kind of things. A lot of these are post facto analysis, to be fair. As they say, in hindsight, everything is strategy. But, you know, at that point, it was just serendipity, just figuring stuff out and saying, okay, let's go down this path. But yeah, I mean, it just made more sense.
And in IIM Bangalore, you had like the regular kind of an approach that, you know, most people look at an MBA as a, like a placement institute that I'm joining this so that I get a good job. So was that your approach also?
Of course we wanted a good job, but I was like, you know, I was really impressed with the kind of people that, like I was in IIT, the kind of people who were around me. And now suddenly you're getting people who are from an arts background, commerce background, science background, not just engineering background, who are tremendously smart, but smart in a very different way. right? I mean, beyond a point, within IIT, there is a certain way of thinking beyond a point, right? There is a certain amount of, and suddenly you meet. So, it was a very refreshing experience. So, yeah, I mean, it was, frankly, you know, I think that age, when you're doing engineering, MBA, I think you're figuring yourself out as to what you want to do. And you're just going down the path of what, like I said, what you don't want to do, you're avoiding, and then trying to maximize from what you are willing to do. And I don't think I had any grand strategy. And I mean, as I remember one of my conversations with one very senior industry leader, when I had, between my two startups, I thought I'll go and do a job for some time. And he looked at my resume, and he looked at my resume and said, "Sonil, you seem to be getting into these right places, but once you're inside those places, you're not doing much. Because my grades were not very good." So I was like, yeah, that's a good observation. I don't know, maybe it's a personality that, you know, once I feel ki oh crack maar diya abhi, I don't have anything else to prove to anybody else. I don't know. Some of these are, you know, difficult rationalizations. But to your question, I was like, let's give it a shot. And in the beginning, you're competitive, then you realize what the hell is wrong. You're so competitive, and you're fired back to my. But to your question, maybe if I'm a preemptive question, I never thought I'll be an entrepreneur when I was a man. Not even once. I never thought I was an entrepreneur. I don't think any of my batchmates, though now they tell me that we knew you would be an entrepreneur, I don't think at that point anybody would have said that. I was very clear.
So you joined Wipro from campus, I'm assuming. And what were those almost 3 years you spent there? So what was those 3 years, and what was the trigger to quit Wipro?
So, I mean, I must place on record, I think Wipro was a great experience. It was a great place to start my career. I think it's a tremendous place to learn some, you know, core lessons of integrity and value and so on. I was also very fortunate that my boss who hired me was also IMP alumni. He interviewed me and I ended up working with him directly for sure. He was very senior to me. We should have had like three people between us, but because we're part of a new initiative, I was working with him directly. So I learned a lot. I learned a hell of a lot in the first 2-3 years. And so I spent some time in the international marketing business in the first year and a half. Then I spent some time in domestic sales, selling PCs to Canara Bank and Vijaya Bank back in 1998. And then I was like, okay, next, when Wipro, the standard career would be ki tum tho hardware time mein karo, then you do software, then you go abroad. And I was like, this is not what I want to do. You know, it just didn't sound, I don't know, maybe juicy enough. Like, there must be something better. And that's when this whole thing of entrepreneurship, you know, started seeming very glamorous. Yeah, yeah, interesting. And I had a few friends, or friend of friends who were entrepreneurs. I used to spend time with them. Kya karte ho, kaise karte ho? And it was very fascinating. But I had no clue, will I ever quit? I had got married just then. So, you know, so to your question, I think it was really, the reason I quit before was, just a why not, right? As against why, right? Why not always makes life not so interesting, and why? And, you know, like, what, right? And why not is a lot more expansive, a lot more liberating. Why is very constraining, very narrow sometimes. Like, क्या होगा, नौकरी छोड़ दोगे, एक साल करोगे, नहीं चलेगा, तो वापस नौकरी मिल ही जाएगी, मतलब व्हाट द बिग डील. सो दैट वाज रियली द वे स्टार्टेड, एंड माय वाइफ वाज इन विप्रो दैट टाइम, सो वी सेड ठीक है, घर तो चलेगा. एंड सी, एंटरप्रेन्योर्स लाइक अस हु आर एंटरप्रेन्योर्स बाय चॉइस एज अगेंस्ट एंटरप्रेन्योर्स बाय, यू नो, बिकॉज़ दे आर फोर्स्ड टू बी एंटरप्रेन्योर्स, व्हिच मेनी ऑफ पीपल आर, ऑलवेज हैव द सेफ्टी नेट कि नौकरी तो मिल जाएगी. वन Second is, very rarely do you do a big capex business. Ki tum bada factory lagaoge 200 crore for ye. Very rarely do. You do a service business. And you are just starting something and pretty much don't need anything, right? You just work harder and sweat smarter. That's probably best you can do. And that's what I did. I had this very simple idea called Learn at Home, where I used to send people to train people on computers at home.
This was like a long-term training or like short-term course to learn computers?
Short-term, simple MS Office, like remember what you just asked me before you started the call? Ki aapne ye kiya, ye kiya, you know, a lot of people don't know how to answer that also, right? So just helping people use computers, MS Office, internet, email.
What NIT was also doing at that time, they also had this.
But NIT is to do it from a hardware and a engineering objective. Okay, NIT was not doing it from a usage objective. And the reason I started was my mom wanted to send me an email. And I told my dad, "Aap se bharo." He said, "Nahi, nahi, maine jigao hua. You come fly down, I'll pay you to fly down from Bangalore to Bombay. And you train her and I'll pay you." I was like, interesting. There's a bucket here. But on a serious note, people are struggling with computing power. People are struggling with using computers. And I thought that I'll just send people to their homes, learn at home. So that's how it started. Let me pause there. So that's how my journey started. Really, why not? Really. And this problem I faced because in Wipro, very often I would be the friendly tech support guy, right? See, a lot of the tech support till that time were hardware tech support. You are PC nahi chal raha hai, tumhara internet connection nahi chal raha hai, but tum Excel mein isko print kaise kar rahe ho, kisi ko nahi pata. The net tech support guy won't know, right? Tumko Word mein, tumko mail mein karna hai, kisi ko koi pata nahi hai, right? The tech support guy is not configured to handle that. The actual usage of the computing power. I mean, the reason you bought the computer was to use the damn thing for your objective. And there was nobody supporting you for that. They only supporting you to keep it running. So I would fool around myself. You know, I would say, kaise ho, I would read up help. I would do some stuff. And I would figure it out. So I would become the informal tech support guy. Saying, "Arey, isko puch le, wo karte kar." So I realized that maybe there's something here. People are struggling with computing power. So I think that's how
it
started.
But it doesn't sound like a very profitable business. I mean, you're sending a person to the house. उसमें कितना फिर बचेगा आपके लिए, you know, and you can't charge very exorbitant amounts also if you want to scale it up.
So well, we should charge 750 rupees for 4 hours of training back in 1998. Okay, and people used to go home. And so of course, you know, like always, I had this thing ki nitna karenge with lifetime value, we'll sell something else, you know, the usual stuff. Yeah, this time for the plan to it, but yeah, it was not scalable, but it was the business that made sense to me, and I just started it. And then as we started that, I also started worrying about scalability. And I found that after I trained somebody, that person, I had a 3-4 people working with me later on. That person would email me saying, "Aapne mereko sikha diya hai, main software se internet ho bhi hai, but a printout aise ho nahi raha. Can you over email send me instructions?" Because he or she knew that if I send my guy, I would charge them funds also. And I would say, "Theek hai, yaar." So I would write email like 1, 2, 3, 4. I say, "Click here, click here, click here." Pretty much help 101, right? And I said, interesting. So I went back to Wipro and said, "Look, you are selling PCs. Why don't you bundle a email support pack into your PCs, home PCs? And whenever customers have a question, they can email right to me and I'll reply over email." Okay. So that suddenly took out the physical part. Then I started looking at that. I was talking to this friend of mine who is now a partner in sports with Jitu, who is in KPM in the US. He had a message that I was 200 rupees per annum money charged kiya Wipro ko wo email support ke liye. So he said, "Tu email support kar raha hai, PC kar raha hai, printer kar raha hai, to Americans ke liye kar, Indians ke liye kyun kar raha? 200 rupees ke 200 dollar mein sakta dekho." I said, "Interesting." Right? So that's when we got moved to what we started a company called Q-Support. We were one of the first remote tech support businesses. Later on, we called BPOs. But back then, there was not even a word called BPO in 1998, and we started Q-Support. We had 100 people in Koramangala, in BTM layout in Bangalore, 24/7 tech support for companies out of Chicago, San Diego.
So your friend was doing customer acquisition and you were doing service delivery?
No. He was just a friend. He just advised me saying.
Nito, customer acquisition kaise kiya aapne? US customers India mein baith ke?
Ah, we landed up. We had an office in New Jersey. We had an office in San Diego.
How did you get the money to set up an office? And
we raised angel funding. We raised angel funding. We raised seed funding. We raised VC funding.
But how did you? वो पूरा मतलब यू अंडरस्टूड ऑल दिस कॉन्सेप्ट्स के अच्छा मुझे ये बिजनेस खड़ा करना है तो मुझे पहले फंडिंग उठानी है मैं फंडिंग इस तरीके से उठाऊंगा लाइक यू नो वर यू लाइक दैट अवेयर एट दैट टाइम लाइक हाउ डिड इट एक्चुअली
No, but then, see, that's the thing, right? The good news is that the problem that most of us face 99% of the time, somebody else has faced it in life. You're not only facing it for the first time. 99% of the time. 1% might be very unique to you, but after you face the problem, you face it. So I would just reach out to the network and figure out, yeah, what's going on, right? And there are people who are willing to help. So one big learning I have had in my journey, I'd say that people are wanting to help, not just willing, wanting to help, but somebody has to ask. The problem is nobody asking. You will find find that if you go out and ask for help, the floodgates are willing to open. Nobody's even knocking on the door. With of course sincerity and not, you know, wasting my time and, you know, also nice obviously hygiene things, right? You should be sincere and you should have done your own homework and everything else. But after you've done your homework and you're struggling with some, with a problem, then enough people will say that isko na aise solve kar, ye kar le, that's okay. And suddenly you're done. So I was fortunate to get a lot of people, a lot of entrepreneurs, investors, friends, senior colleagues who maybe thought that I was sincere enough in this problem solving, that they also, you know, helped in the way they could. And I'm trying very hard to pay it forward. People reach out and wherever I can, I help.
So you raised funds and you set up like a 100 plus member BPO unit, like a pioneering BPO unit. Then what happened? Like, you know, why?
I made probably the biggest mistake of my life. And I listened to a piece of advice that I shouldn't have listened. I mean, I've got a lot of shitty advice, but this one I listened. And the advice that I listened to was, Samuel, you have set up the company, you have got the early customers, you have raised funding. Now you move on and do something else and let somebody else run this company. This is in the middle of the dot-com bust. Okay. And like I said, I heard a lot of shitty advice. This one I heard, I listened to. And I got carried away by this thing of serial entrepreneur, struggling, and all that nonsense. Okay. The shittiest piece of advice anybody. Anyway, I keep telling people not to go down it. But so what happened with that, Akshay, was there was a time when the business was not obviously doing well because dot-com bust and Danda Niyarat and all that. But we still had enough revenue. Of course, we had more than revenue ka cost because we were trying to grow. But we're not a zero revenue company, right? So what we should have done, what I should have done, is I should just cut all my indirect costs so that my indirect cost is equal to less than my
cost. What were the indirect costs?
People, mainly people. People and some travel and marketing and sales.
Well, you had become flabby as an organization, you're saying. Right. Like you could have...
Not flabby, we were designed for growth and the market just tanked. No? This is a dot-com bust. The market just tanked. So we were designed for growth and suddenly the market tanked. So I should have just cut my costs. Instead, I chose to step away and hire a CEO and say, tu chala.
Okay.
Now what happens with that is, and that's again, and that's the biggest mistake I've made in my life. But what happens with that is, you know, everybody's baby is nobody's baby. So there are investors, there are board members, there's a CEO, there's a core team, and everybody is thinking for himself only. The CEO is thinking about his next job. Core team is thinking about the next job. Investors are thinking about the portfolio. They have 1 in 10, right? Their success. And maybe you're not the 1 in 10. So this baby is nobody's baby.
What was your stake in it?
I was probably at 15-20%. But I think it's not about ownership stake. It's not an equity issue. I think it's an ownership issue. I think it's distinguished the two, right? It's an ownership issue. It has to be somebody's baby. And somebody is to say, to baju hato, main dekha usko, right? And that person is always, in my mind, not always, let me correct that, is the real co-founder or founder. That could be somebody who joined yesterday, okay? It could be somebody who joined yesterday, not somebody who started it 20 years ago. But if that person has the ownership to say, you know what, I will take care of this. While everybody is figuring out their next steps, right? Right? Somebody has to say, this is my baby. And at that point, I was not there. I made a mistake. And finally, long story short, the company shut down. And within 15 months of the company shutting down, there were 1,000 to 2,000 people, tech support people.
Right. Yeah, around 2002, the whole boom started with GE and
and I remember Rajesh Jain coming to our office when he was after the India World, he sold to Sify and he was an investor for Sify. And I remember him asking me, Somil, Wipro is India's largest IT company. Wipro ke paas 35 tech support ke log hai. Aur tere paas 100 hai. Kaise ho sakta hai? Tell me the business logic. Rajesh ko laga, Rajesh, baat to barabar hai. I can't argue with you. But something is, yahan kuch to hai. What you're saying is true. It's just data, right? I can't argue with data. But yahan kuch to hai. Kuch to banega iska. I didn't know BPO at the time. The word didn't exist. But yahan kuch to hai. Now, I should have just stayed with it. So my biggest learning into Sports Village, or even, not even Sports Village, into when I got out of that, and of course it was very intense. You know, failure is a very intense experience, and our education system doesn't prepare you for it. I was not prepared for it. I have never failed in my life. I've done reasonably well, you know, barring some girlfriends here and there. Suddenly you've done reasonably well in life. But, you know, and then suddenly you have this thing where failure is stark. You can't negotiate with this failure. Company band ho gayi. that's it. I mean, you can't negotiate with it, right? You can't say, oh, by the way, no this, by the way, no that. And that's when I realized that I should have just stuck on with it. So I had a few key learnings. One was that if what you're offering fundamentally makes sense to a consumer or to the market, fundamentally, and that's the biggest if, then just wait for the right time when the market wave happens. And when the market wave happens, like from 100 became 5,000 people BPOs, you will also get carried by the market wave. You don't have to do anything smarter. But as an entrepreneur, you can only make the market wave. Well, you cannot make the market wave. As an entrepreneur, you can stay alive, right? You can only convince investors to invest in you, convince startup, your co-founders to stay along, convince early team members to stay and they have all the belief and all that, right? Market aayega jab aayega. Market doesn't care how smart you are. Market doesn't care how well you are funded. Market doesn't care what degrees you hold. Market will buy when the market is willing to buy. So therefore, this notion of, which I think is the most powerful weapon that we have but we never use, is a thing called time. So I told myself, whatever I choose to do next, I will give myself as much time as required. I will take my time to figure out what it should. But once I commit, as long as it takes, take time, right? We'll solve the problem. And again, with the fundamental premise, if what you're offering makes fundamental sense, then the model will emerge.
So in that 2001 to 3 period, like, you know, when you heard the advice that you take a back seat and do your next venture, what was it that you were doing at that time then?
I felt that, so I thought of myself as a tech entrepreneur actually. So I thought, yeah, the reason the business didn't work as well was because I did not have my own relationship in the market in the US, in the tech business. So I said, let me build my own tech relationships. So I found a job in the Bay Area where I was managing partnerships for Ethernet switching software company with Intel, Marvel, and all these guys. It was an Indian company, but I was managing the partnerships. I was in the Bay Area, in the tech world, and I was networking with people and meeting people. So, normally, but I couldn't do it beyond that. And I quit. So, my wife and I sold our stuff in Bangalore. We moved to US, we bought stuff in the house, we bought a car. And 9 months, we stole stuff in the house, sold the car, and came back to Bangalore. I just couldn't do it. I just needed the entrepreneurial. I just had to be on my own again.
Okay. Well, you had tasted blood in a way, so job, well, it was...
these are, you know, they're very colorful metaphors. Maybe yeah. It is, I don't know. But I know that I was extremely restless. I was just not at peace. And my wife said, look, what's the point of being in the US if you're so restless and not at peace? And what happened though on a serious note was I did spend time in the US trying to find start a company and all that. So I went and met people. That's what you normally do, right? And you think your ideas are going to be. And as I met people, I found everybody asking me about India. And I would introduce them to this, suddenly, and so everybody was latching onto my Indian network. Well, I was in the Bay Area asking for ideas to do in the Bay Area. And so I asked myself, but kya ho raha hai? If the value that I have is in India, my network is in India. Should I be starting a venture in India? Why am I doing it in India? So as an entrepreneur, the only thing you bring to the table is your ability to sweat smarter, your credibility, reputation, therefore your network, right? People are willing to pick up the phone when you call. People are willing to put in a word for you. People are willing to open the door for you. Our Mera network was in India. So I said, let's just come back to India. So we came back. We had no idea what we were going to do. But we said, India, we're going to I joined a friend startup to help him some early time. But I was very clear over time, I'll do something on my own. Yeah, so then I was again, I thought of myself a tech entrepreneur. I kept thinking of ideas around technology and internet and all that stuff. And this friend of mine, Jay Shankar, and I were, he was with me in Q-Support, my way venture. And so my earlier, the tech support venture was called Q-Support. And so Jay and I were together at this time. And so he and I were fooling around with ideas. To whiteboard, to get started. We spent a full afternoon. It was fun. As we were leaving that room, Jay said, I wish there were more places for kids to play. So I said, I didn't have kids that time. I said, why, what happened? So he said, my beta Siddharth, who then was 6 years old. Siddharth now, by the way, is in IIT Kanpur. Time flies. So Siddharth, you know, Siddharth, mujhe khelne nahi aata. I said, kyun nahi aata? Unka jagah nahi hai khelne ko. He will talk about Bangalore. I said, jagah nahi hai matlab? He said, yaar, jagah nahi hai. बाहर मेन रोड है या तो फिर कहीं गाड़ी या पास में या तो यहाँ पे ओपन एरिया है, वहाँ पे कचरा पड़ा हुआ है, सेफ नहीं है, ग्लास टूटा हुआ है, कहाँ जाए खेलने पे? I said, okay. Then he said, oh, social skills is kharab ho rahe hain, but you ek karta hai, whatever. I said, okay. I didn't have kids, so I could not relate to that pain. I said, okay. So he said, I wish there was places, safe places for kids to play. I said, okay, I like sports. I said, tell me more, what do you think? So bola, Bangalore mein, I had a friend with Bangalore. Bangalore, there are now 30 feet or 40 feet plots. They are lying idle. As part of the layout development, they do plots. 30 by 40, 40 by 60 around. So they are all different dump yards. Right? So he said, I wish we let's go to the owners and tell them that we will plot to staff the bringing, gas lagging this pay, or pay what the bachayangi, parents will have killing it, so those who pay. And like that, we'll have a network of sports, network of grounds or safe spaces all over the country. Yagi Bacha can just walk from where Bacha and parent can just walk from wherever they are, they live, and go play and come back. That's when it like just clicked for me. I said, wow, this sounds interesting. And I just jumped onto it. Completely serendipitous. And you know, this friend of mine in IIT, when I was mugging for GRE, this friend of mine wanted to help me understand, you know, you use tricks to learn the words, right? So he said serendipity ko yaad karne ka tarika tip hota hai. The serendipity is when you're looking for needle in a haystack and you find the farmer's daughter.
Okay.
The question is not that you found the farmer's daughter. Question is what will you do now? Right? Are you going to still look for a look for the needle? Are you going to do something very interesting? What happened with me was just that I was looking for needle in a haystack and disappeared. And serendipity always presents a choice. You could listen to it or ignore it. Fortunately, I chose to listen to it. And lo and behold, 17 years have passed.
So, how did you start it off? And you started with Jay only, like both of you together?
Yeah, actually, originally Jay and I started, and Jay and another friend, Jitu. This is the guy who I told you was in the US, KPMG. So, he's also from BAC where I grew up, childhood. And he's also been a big sports freak, he's an entrepreneur. So, actually, we are here, so I'm in. So, three of us started. Jay moved out within the first year or so, and then Jitu and I actually continued.
So, like this, you executed the same idea you discussed, talk to property owners and make it into a playground?
Yeah, that was the idea. And we thought that we will set up our own first place so that we can prove that look, it works. But we again rented a place from a landlord in Bangalore, and we had no money.
So you had no money. Then how did you like actually execute the idea?
So we went out and raised money for friends and family. And in hindsight, I think we probably did a very smart thing, which is that it was Jay's idea, not mine. Which is that we went and said to a bunch of our friends, "Yeah, 1-2 lakh do." This is 2003, okay? 1-2 lakh do, jada mo. So we raised some 35 lakh from 15-20 people. Now, the reason it was smart, well, obviously we took our time to figure out the model and we could return the money, and you know. And so let's see, if I had taken 50 lakhs from you, Akshay, in 2003, you would have been sitting in my house in Los Angeles, right? Whereas if I had taken a lakh from you, lakh and a half from you, you're like, okay, at worst, you're writing it off, right? Okay, first of all, you're trying to do something. Worst case, okay, one and a half. So in hindsight, not strategy again, and maybe their strategy to be fair, it just worked for us. It just took away the time period from it, right? So yeah, that's how we started. We had a ground in Bangalore, and we thought we'll have a network of sports leaders across the country, in every zip code of the country. Partnering with real estate guys, by an apartment complex guy, school owners, after school. It was all meant to be after school evening, the academy.
Mm-hmm. And then, how did the business evolve? Like, from running your own to, I think, eventually it was more about schools as your customer. So, how did that evolve?
So, yeah, when we started out, we were meant to be a noun. You know, we were a noun. Now we are a verb. So, a noun is a place, right? We're meant to be a set of places. The sports village, when we started out in 2003, was meant to be a place. Now, we are a verb. We are a service. We deliver a program. We don't have our own place at all. We partner with schools. We partner with academies, we partner with, you know, brands, CSR donors, government, but we don't have our own place at all. We don't have a single place.
So, like, how many years did it take you to figure out
so,
that you need to be like an asset light, jo aaj ke lingo mein hai, asset light model?
These are words I'm just ready to say. You know, these are all outside in world. You're asset light. How are you asset light? That time we just trying to figure out a bloody model. Like, you know, paisa kaise banega? Asset heavy, asset light, or money. So, So 2003 to 2008 was our huge experimentation phase. And remember, you know, in hindsight, we call it experimentation. At that point, every experiment we did, we felt was the one. यही है, ये चलने वाला है, ये चलेगा, of course ये चलेगा. And every time we had Excel sheet where we would become millionaires in like 18 months. And right, so I think the issue is around. No, we thought that we'll get access to real estate everywhere. It didn't happen. So then we went to apartment complex thinking, what are we doing? That didn't work out. Then we tried to hire a small hall for small kids to play. That didn't work out. Then we tried to sell tickets for the World Cup. Then we tried to do two sports tours. Then we did build an app thinking, do back to 2008 social media before Facebook and Twitter, which would help people to find other people to play with and all that stuff. To fight the bahut mara hai, like I said, it's a juicy problem to solve, and we're like solve karenge isko. And then finally 2008 end is when I said, look, so one thing that did work to a small extent was corporates and sports, where corporates were using us for some HR team building, some events, some intercorporate, intracorporate, employee engagement, so as a sales promotion, so a marketing budgets, like a sports event management, that became one part of our business. Okay. Over time, of course, we became very large in that. That was the starting point, pre-2008. But that was still not, in my view, a sustainable and scalable way to get kids to play. It was very episodic. Events, by definition, is right. So I said that is important, but that is not solving the problem we wanted to solve. So I kept looking, so Jitu kept focusing on the event side. And that's how we divided our work also. Jitu focused on the event business because he felt passionate about that as a revenue stream. And I said, yeah, that is not solving the problem that I wanted to solve. Let me still keep looking for solution. So we configured the business different way. We created multiple entities. He had a higher equity in that entity. I had a lower equity. We did all kinds of stuff so that, you know, there's freedom. Otherwise, kya hota hai, you are just, you know, there's not enough happening and you're kind of fighting more than doing. So we said, okay, let's align, but let's go our own ways. And then figure out in the future how do we come back together. And so I tried a few models, app and tickets and everything else. And finally in 2008, I decided to knock on school doors. And frankly, it was just another of the idea. It was not like, and we said, we will... But one important thing we said is we will not do after school academies, we will do in school program. Ki aapka school ka jo PE class hai, wo aap humko outsource karo. The after school academy chala nahi tha. So one important thing that I realized, and again, maybe some of my education background is to give credit for that, is ki wo hi galti ek baar kar li, wo galti fir se nahi karenge. Ab nahi galti karenge. You know, but the after school academy didn't work in 2005. There's no point going in 2008 and saying again after school. So I remember meeting some school leaders in 2008-09, and they said, "Huh, good idea, Mr. Somali. Why don't you start with the after school academy? And the next year we'll see in school." And I would say, "No, sir. After school, I don't." And they would look at me and say, "Pagal hai, I'm giving you a chance to do after school academy in my school. You're saying no, but like, you know." And I would say, "No, this didn't work." And so that was one piece that started getting some traction. Of course, it was tough. We waited also principals' cabin for hours, not met, even then not got a meeting. We tried to use our degrees to get a meeting. We did all kinds of stuff. But slowly we felt that we did have a model which had a unit economics, which are of course profitable at a GMV, and a large addressable market, which, as you know, are the two criteria for any scalable.
Okay, so in a year, you like how many schools did you sign up in that year? Like 9 to 10? 9 you started this, so...
10 ya 12 school. And that's when seed fund, which is early stage fund, Bharti Jacob, Praveen Gandhi, you know, HMT, they invested in us. And Bharti Jacob and Praveen Bhai had invested in my early venture in Q Support also. So they knew of me as an entrepreneur. And, you know, they made the mistake of giving the same entrepreneur again. And I made the mistake of taking the same investor again. They were kind enough to invest. And that's how what was called Edu Sports started separately as a brand with the company. And that kind of, we were able to raise money from, because that model was scalable. And parallelly, Jitu ran Sports Consult, which was the events marketing, sport, what you call experiential sports marketing business now, where you work with brands and leagues and governments to do large-scale events, again, to help them achieve their goals through sports. So that both of those journeys continued, and then 2015, Gaza Capital, which is in the private equity investor in India, they invested in EduSport. They bought out all the older investors, and that's the time when we kind of brought the sports consult business together again, while it was at arm's length. We put it all together, and we said, okay, what do we call this combined entity now? Because otherwise it was EduSports and Sports Consult. And I said, look, earlier it was Sports Village, why don't you just call it Sports Village? So now again, this combined entity got formed because of the Gaza Capital investment, and it became Sports Village 2015.
So tell me about the unit economics that you figured out that this is making sense. Like, what was your pitch to a school? What did you charge them? And what was your investment in delivering that?
So our pitch to a school was sports and education. Do you agree or not? I mean, I'm saying it a bit rudely, but you say it really politely. And obviously, people would agree. Yes, sports and education. And I would say, okay, if you think sports education, then run sports the way core education is run. How do you run maths or science? You have a curriculum, you have textbooks, you have daily lesson plans, you have assessment for each child, you have parent interaction, you have a report card, the child is not doing well, gets more attention, right? All this stuff happens. But in sports, you're saying sports education, but in sports, you don't have a curriculum, you don't have lesson plans, you don't have a trained teacher. You don't spend time on the weaker kids. You instead spend time with the smarter kids. You don't have a report card. You don't have a democratic way of assessing your program. So you're just saying sports education, not doing it. So they would say, okay, what do you have? We say, okay, we have exactly this. We have curriculum, we have assessment. So that's how it started. So we said, look, we are here to help a school leader deliver sports as part of it.
Like, how much time did it take you to get all these things in place? Like, did in 2009-10 when you were pitching, were you pitching this exact thing, or this like took a couple of years to reach?
No. It's all evolution. Like I said, hindsight, everything is strategy. I still remember in 2000, see, when we first started, we thought we'd only be a training and consulting company. We'll not even have our own trainer delivering the program. Okay, we thought hum training karenge, teacher class karega, data capture karke humko bhejega, hum data analytics karenge, usko bolenge aap to ye kar. And life will be good, and we will be like 5-6 people in the room, and we'll be getting hundreds of schools to play, and all is well. Now, I still remember one hot afternoon in Hyderabad, and I met this lady called Aparna ma'am, she's the principal of a school. And after making me wait for 2 hours, finally at like 3:30 in the afternoon, she called me inside and said, Mr. Samil, I've seen your proposal. I like what you're doing. I said, very good. I said, look, order will drive. So, who will you send to deliver the curriculum? So I said, ma'am, who will you send? What do you mean? You have 5 PE teachers. I will train them. She said, no, Mr. Samil, that won't work. I said, ma'am, you have 5 PE teachers. And till that time, we didn't even think about hiring our own team. Okay? We thought, like, okay, very good. So then after the 30 seconds or 2 and 4, she looked at me. Look, I still remember. She looked me in the eye. I said, Mr. Samil, I like what you're doing. I hope you succeed. But if you don't send your own trained staff, even if I buy the program this year, I can assure you that the books will lie in the library gathering dust. I can assure you it will not be implemented. And next year when the management asks me the question, I'll have to say, sorry, we can't do it. So choice is yours. And in that moment, I said, okay, ma'am, we'll send you staff. I had no clue how to hire staff. I had no clue how to train staff. I had no clue how to deliver it. But I could feel the customer, you know, the classic early adopter saying, do this and I'll buy from that. I like what you're doing. I see you're sincere. I like your product, but your product has this feature missing. Add this feature and I'll buy from you. And I said, okay. That meant a completely different business model from a technology consulting company to become a service delivery, right? Before COVID, as of March 31st, we had almost 2,000 people on our roads because we were training, we were running a program.
Mm-hmm. So for each school, you would have like a couple of...
Yes, each school would have a trainer, at least one. Some schools we had 6 or 7 trainers. So, we just morphed from a technology consulting company to a service delivery.
So, this was in 2010 that you hired your first trainer?
2009. So there are two questions. The unit economics was curriculum, assessment, trainer, PTMs, events, sports days. And if the school was spending around 2 lakhs, 2.5 lakhs a year, they would spend 6.5-7 lakhs. So we were not a cheaper outsourcing model. We were a model to help them deliver on the promise that they were already making of sports and part of education, but not really delivering on it. And of course, the context was that, you know, neighborhood playgrounds were disappearing, therefore parents did not have other options of getting kids playing. Therefore, school became the only option. So, you know, a lot of this is about timing, right? I mean, you know, beyond a point, as I'm sure you've seen the studies, the largest determinant of success of ventures is timing, which is when in the market a bunch of forces come together that just sets it up for the venture to succeed.
So your monetization of a school, was it just the school only paying that 6 lakhs or did you also have like outside school hours programs for which parents would pay directly?
So originally we had only in school because we wanted to focus on it and get strong enough on it and build it. Then as we built further, we added the co-sport business and the partnership. We came together under Sports Village for the after-school model. We had our own events and leagues on the weekends. We added sports tools. So the idea was that we help kids on their entire sports journey. Sports as a part of education is a fundamental, like physical literacy, after which there are different levels of engagement in terms of weekend participation, inter-school tournaments, talent and so on. So the idea was to, as Sports Village, the idea was to help, you know, how do we get 100 million kids to play, and not everybody needs to get better in competition every time. You could just play the same level and just have fun for the rest of your life.
Okay. And so where all are you present? Like, you know, where do most of your customers, like
250 odd locations across the country.
But where are you strong in? Like, what are your top states?
Well, Tamil Nadu, Karnataka, NCR, Punjab, Gujarat, Maharashtra. I mean, I think there are a few that we're not strong at, but pretty much we are spread out.
Okay. So, I want to understand how you learn to build an organization. I mean, you know, so managing 5 people, 10, 20 people, even up to 50, 100 people you had done in the past, although it was single location. Now you have the challenge of multiple location, 1 or 2 people per location, multiple states all over the country. So, you know, how did you build this kind of an organization with such a remote, distributed workforce? I'm assuming there would be very little oversight on what a trainer is doing in a school, just because, I mean, you know, you can't have like one supervisor to one trainer. And so, you know, how did you solve this organization building challenge?
So one thing that helped us, if you look at Sports Village, one part of it was the school business, where the solution was actually the school itself. Because our program was happening in a very structured environment called the school. Right? The school had a timetable, the school had a coordinator, school had, you know, supervisors. So we also enabled them with audit sheets so they could review themselves. So we provided the lesson plans and the curriculum to them so that they could just open the book and say, aaj ye hona tha, ye ho raha hai. Right, so that is one. Second, of course, we had for 1 in 10, we had a delivery manager, we had a relationship manager for you guys and speech. Second, we used a fair amount of technology at the back.
Like, you know, how did you build these people? Like, how did you build trainers? How did you build a delivery manager? These are not off-the-shelf resources. No, I mean, you can...
No, of course, we hired and we trained and we spent time.
As in, you like created an academy to train coaches and...
Yeah, well, academy is, yeah, I mean, we trained them.
So, what about your, like, middle management layer? Like, you know, your state heads and, like, how did you create that layer? Like, people who would probably be...
So, in the beginning, we centralized, right? In the beginning, we centralized, so some of us would play the role. And then, over time, we hired people, again, in the beginning, a lot of personal network. People who fundamentally had a managerial capability, but need not have a technical capability. or the domain knowledge. And now over time, it's been a lot more domain knowledge. And even a lot of our, I mean, we spent a lot of time on the training and all that. A lot of our teams are actually from growth. So like right now, as you speak, our head of product for school started with the trainer.
Okay. So essentially, like becoming a trainer was like a gateway to multiple functions and roles within the organization. Like you would.
Yeah, I mean that our culture was that, of course, meritocracy, but we said let's give our internal guys a chance first before hire them out. The benchmarks are not going to reduce, but maybe some time might be given more. But if the existing guy can do it in 2 extra months, we'll give him a chance.
And how did you use technology to scale up?
So not back end technology was on the front because it was a very physical experience of getting kids to play. But we used SMS-based reporting in the beginning so that all the lesson plan execution was reported. We used an app to upload assessment-based data, assessment data. So see, as to give you an example, if I do assessment 500 kids and our assessment had roughly 8 parameters, I would be tracking 4,000 data points per school, per assessment, right? Into 100 schools or 1,000 schools through the map. So suddenly the amount of data that's coming in. And then you're processing data to say, last year kya tha bachcha, improvement work nahi hua hai, right? Fitness question kya hai, ski question kya hai. The usual analytics you would do on any other data. So we developed it ourselves. And so that's interesting.
Like your trainers had like a mobile app or something where they could input data.
Okay.
And so you know what is like the out of your total addressable market, I mean, you know, maybe not every school would be a customer for you. What is your percentage reach, like, you know, how much have you penetrated?
No, see, this is a huge market, and we're right now at around, at a private school, we're at around 800 private schools. Only CBSE has around 25,000 private schools. CBSE. ICSE around 3,000. So there are like 3,000 of our schools. You can CBSE, ICSE, and we are like 800. Okay. Then if you add matriculation schools, state board schools, all the schools, so that number of private schools is in length of the rank. There are 1 million government schools. So this market is not a market size problem. The problem is a market access problem. Because decision making is, you know, trust the principles, take time, long time, all that. So now I think, you know, we have got a fair amount of credibility, we've been around long enough. So now that people think of school, they don't call us. So now the selling is getting easier, well, pre-COVID. But yeah. It's the exhibition. Now we reach the exhibition problem. If you remember, I told you earlier, one is to figure out the model, second is to scale the model. I think now we reach the problem of scaling the model. Model works, model is profitable. Now how do you scale it with least friction? So I'm trying to find a lazy solution to it.
And you're working with the governments also, like directly with state governments and all for their schools?
Yes. So there, yes, we are. We are government of the in-school program, so we work with them. But also, we are also a vocational service provider, VTP Local Training Partner for LSTC. So in 8 states, we run the vocational training program in 50 of schools for PES 4. So when kids choose the 9th and 10th standard for PES 4 education service, our trainers go to deliver them.
So, you know, what do you think is the way to go from 1,500 to 15,000?
So, I think the network effect at one level has to, and that has started to begin pre-COVID. So, what more schools are looking at sponsored to be part of education beyond just the namesake stuff. So, I think the real issue is access, and the issue is how do you get the parent community to demand a better sports program. So, in private schools, the parents demand stuff will happen. The parents don't demand. It's going to be an option. And that's why I think this whole NEP is also aligned well. NEP is talked about play-based learning. So I think it feels like the timing is just falling right in terms of policy, in terms of parents' concern. As the year is now COVID, the whole health and fitness comes into the equation. And therefore, sports will become one thing now. But we are also trying to leverage across the academy business, across the brand business, to see how can we get budgets from brands to help it with the program.
Sorry, you've not spoken about the brand's business. What is the brand's business?
It is the corporate part, right? It was not with corporates. When you started in the engagement, it is now over time evolved into helping brands achieve their business objectives of engaging consumers through sports and programs. So, we use our largest youth sports program in India. We've done the Reliance Foundation in sports.
experience program with brands like Milo and others, Scrapply, Matter. If they want to reach out to their consumers, we design a sports program. And again, there also the central gravity schools. The schools provide a sustainable and scalable way and economical way to access kids. If you design a program, it is easier to education. So we're also looking at finding ways to align these two goals, right? Brand wants these kids in a good way, or schools want to provide sports in a good way. Kids want the sports in a good way. They didn't want to. Is there a way to, you know, connect the dots on the end? So early days, like CSR, we're doing a lot of work with the amazing companies who are investing in education as part of the CSR objective. It tells them that add a layer of sports to their education investment, so the efficacy of their education investment depends. So that's also we're seeing a lot of traction there.
What is it that you are currently excited about? You know, what is some interesting challenge? Like, of course, there is a bigger, juicy problem that you're solving, but within this, what is like at a more micro level, something which you are excited to solve as a problem or something you're excited to learn?
So I think this COVID situation has created opportunity of moving technology in digital in a way that has never happened. And I'm trying very hard to figure out how do we use this to achieve the objective already. And towards that, we made a few initiatives. We have this notion of home visibility playground, and therefore we launched our own live interactive service for Active Club, which is a B2C service. We are a 2,000 large paid subscribers on it, where kids log in and get a live interactive session on multiple sports, fun fitness, yoga, martial arts, in the home. For schools, we launched a Play at Home, which again directly live online classes to leaderboards. For schools, we deliver health and fitness for the students.
Did you lose customers due to COVID? Because schools have been under pressure.
Yeah, a lot of schools. Yeah, yes. We lose, and then people have said, look, when things come back, we'll re-engage again. So we've kind of gone pause right now. But yes. So digital is a dual question. How do you use technology and digital? Because this COVID, while it's a very big pain, has created this opportunity to use digital in a way that people are willing to accept today. And how do you deliver sports programs? So we're doing that with, even during COVID time, our CSR programs are running in communities where we're limited to access. So we found a way to deliver a physical model, like offline and online. So a very interesting way of using technology and digital to still achieve the same goal of getting to play. Which before COVID, we were a very physical company. But COVID has given us the opportunity to do digital transformation. So that's really exciting. And hopefully that can then, see, once that works, you can then address the whole world. And as we speak, our active club customers are from some 7 different companies. So they found us and they're signing up with us. So suddenly the digital and the whole world can be able.
So, yeah, I mean, you had those years of like one vase, I can say, in a way, where you were experimenting and failing and experimenting and failing. So, you know, how did you sustain yourself then?
So, I think the way the time as the weapon that we don't value enough, that's one thing that works. And once you remove, see, I think in entrepreneurship and definitely most founders, when they start out, there is this unstated time limit of 5 to 7 years. Right? It's very unstated, very implicit, nobody talks about it. But hey, now what happens with that is if your first experiment doesn't work and you used up your money and you're getting to the value of death, right? And then coming out of it can take 2 to 3 years again. Suddenly, out of 5 to 7 years, you used up 2 to 3 years. And then you only have 2 to 3 years left now, right? And therefore, you do something stupid. You either go and try and raise a ton of money, thinking that money can solve your problem, or you know, give up and say, I ain't even around. All because of a very artificial notion of 5 to 7 years of time required to build a business. And my view is that it takes 15 to 20 years to build something really valuable, right? So therefore, take your time to decide what you want to do, but once you decide to scale it, now I'll answer your other questions, is how did we survive from that? So good news, says that, you know, again, people who are entrepreneurs of choice, once you decide ki yaar karna hai lamba, then it's actually a cash flow problem, right? Because you need to find a way to run your house. So, and I have done this, I have done part-time consulting with friends, I have done
that's the easiest way, right? And you can easily work for, let's say, part-time with a friend and earn enough to rent your house and do your venture on the side. So I've done that. I have taken loans. I have diluted my equity. I have done all that with the idea that I and my family should get a certain living standard, which I don't want to compromise. If that means at the end of the whole thing, I have lesser equity than I could have had, that's fine. So journey is equally important than destination. So once you think about the cash flow problem, then it's very easy to solve cash flow problems. Just to, you know, do a part-time consulting or cut your costs. You can't go to Switzerland every second month. You have to go out again. That's it. Right? So it's not really difficult. And that's why it comes back to the main question of how badly do you want to solve this problem? How juicy is it for you? Right? And that, to me, that's a fundamental starting point. And if it's not juicy enough, when things get tough, you will end up asking the question, why am I doing this? And I think there's a notion of opportunity cost that works in all these conversations. Ki market with na mil raha hai, tere batch with na mil raha hai, tu kya kar raha hai, right? But there's also the notion that I think people should remember, which is this notion of opportunity cost and not doing. What I mean by that is not just the passion and the, you know, mother with apple pie kind of stuff, ki I'm following my dream and all that stuff, right? But what I mean is that if you give it enough time, that's assuming, again, you go back to the first conversation, assuming you're offering something that fundamentally makes sense. Like in my view, getting kids to play fundamentally is a value. Now I have to find a model around it. It fundamentally makes sense, and you give it enough time, and you keep experimenting, trying, you will at some point find the right model. And then at some point, the market will come. When that happens, it might take 5 years, it might take 10 years, in our case, it's taken 17 years, which is working progress. When that happens, all your opportunity costs will get more than compensated by one product market fit in the market is coming. You know? Because end of the day, opportunity cost takes some amount of salary every month into a number of years, right? But even if you, let's say, own 10% of a company which is really achieving this product market fit, and do the math, 10% of the valuation of the company, you will easily know the company in the category within itself. Apart from the fact that you learn, start earning salary after some time and, you know, not zero, you know, you're at it. So, therefore, the opportunity cost of not doing it is that you could have achieved your financial objectives, although with some delayed gratification, and done what you really wanted to do. Then why won't you do it, right? And my question to myself was that if you think you are so smart, and all of us think we are smart, then solve the problem without compromising on the opportunity cost. See, building a business while compromising opportunity is the easiest thing to do, right? I followed my passion. I earned one-tenth of what I could earn, but I followed my passion. What's the big deal in that? If you are so smart, find a way to follow your passion and build a business and earn more than what you would earn in salary, at least, or ideally, and make a ton of money. That is the problem you should solve, you know, if you're so smart.
So that, of course, is everybody's dream. But, you know, what you said, it's like, it's what every aspiring entrepreneur has as his dream, na? Ki mujhe, matlab fun bhi chahiye, paisa bhi chahiye, and naam bhi chahiye.
Problem hai ki wo time nahi de raha. Log time nahi dete usko. Problem wohi hai. And the problem with time scarcity is not created by entrepreneurs. It's created by the investor community and the notion ki 5-7 saal mein kar lo, otherwise why are you doing it? Because funds have a 5-7 year survival. Nobody's written in stone, no God has said.
In 2010, when you raised from seed fund, are they still investors with you? Have they had that level of patience?
No, they got to exit with, no, they got okay. to exit with okay. Gaja. And now Gaja, of course, is wanted to exit. But remember, investors need to exit. You don't have to exit.
Right.
If you think you have no catch plan. And if exit comes, then of course, that's it. That's a choice to make. But my point to you was that the time as a notion is an opportunity cost argument. And opportunity cost counters opportunity cost of not doing it. And the base level cash flow is an imaginable problem.
Yeah, sounds.
So think of time as the ultimate weapon.
Sounds easy when you say it, but I'm sure when you're in the thick of things, actually going through cash flow crisis, ke main rent kaise dunga next mahine ka type of problems.
You know, this reminds me of this. I did this Nehru-Sharma Martinelli course in 1995, after my MB, and so Uttarkashi mein hai, and then we were. Learning snowcraft, ice craft and all that. 18,000 feet per camp tempo, and it's like minus 30 in the night. Really cold, really freezing. The instructor was a Sherpa called Norbu sir. Thunder. Finally, it was so cold, and we went and lived there, hot and dark, ऑफिस चलते हैं तो एक दिन सामान बढ़ा दिया आपको, दूसरे दिन सामान बढ़ा दिया, तीसरे दिन बिठाया आपको और हमको बोला तुम जिधर से आया इधर फोम का मैट्रेस था ना, हाँ सर था, उधर गर्म पानी था ना, हाँ सर था, तुम खुद इधर आया ना, हाँ सर खुद इधर आया. So to your question, it's tough and all that, but we chose this, right? The easy job was there. You left your easy job for this, and now when it's hurting, you're saying, "Oh, it's hurting." Are you medical? You came for this. So let me give you the next day again. We went and thanked Bobu sir, okay? Again to complete this story, it's relevant to the entrepreneurship journey. And again we thanked sir, "Bahut okay, humne samjha aapka baat, but not okay." Then he said, "But tumhara aaspaas dekho kya dekh raha hai? It's all white, okay? It's all white. Sir, kya hai? Barf hai karte hai." He said, "Jitna dekhna hai, dekh lo." जब तुम प्लेन्स पे जाओगे ना तो फ्रीजर खोल के खरोट खरोट के खाओगे. तो इसका ऐसे ही है, मतलब अभी दर्द हो रहा है बट व्हेन यू लीव इट यू आर लाइक मैन आई वांट दैट.
So that was Saumil Mazumdar telling us how he built Sports Village, one of the largest youth sports platform. If you'd like to know more, log on to sportsvillage.com. That's sportzvillage.com. If you like the Founder Thesis podcast, then do check out our other shows on subjects like marketing, technology, career advice, books, and drama. Visit thepodium.in, that is thepodium.in, for a complete list of all our shows.
This was an HD Smartcast original. HD Smartcast.
Log on to hdsmartcast.com to listen to more such podcasts.